The Asian Classics Institute presents A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach. Recorded live in New York City in October of 1997. This is the beginning of Class 4.
Questions about that anymore? No? No, I mean, any... No? My Lama would say, oh, you all understood it perfectly. Yeah. Yeah, right. That's a pretty good point. Leon said... Excuse me? Yeah. Leon said... If you assume that the object helps cause the awareness of it, it's called a mikyan in Buddhist philosophy. It means a perceptual condition, meaning that when you hold a pen up and the awareness of the pen happens a minute later, a millisecond later, the pen has to precede the perception of it. And that, I was talking about that because it was one of the reasons why there's no subject without a corresponding object. That's a tenet of Buddhism. You know, that if there's no object to be seen, then you can't have a subject. Okay, subject state of mind. So it does sound like if the pen existed the millisecond before you saw it, that it's not true that it's a projection, because the projection should come later, right? The projection is a creation of the mind. So it seems to be contradictory. You could say that the data, the colors and shapes, are projected a millisecond before the projection of the pen. Okay, something like that. All right. So you're projecting. There's a dakshi, which means the data, the raw data, and then there's a dokche, which means the mind that organizes the data into an object, and then a second later there's a takchu, which means an organized object such as the pen. So the dakshi is the colors and shapes. The dokche is the state of mind which projects onto it, or which... I thought of a good word the other day. What's it? Imputes or lays onto it. But there's another word. Can't remember. Anyway, it imputes or lays onto it the idea of pen. And then a millisecond... You can say a scribe. Ascribed to me means this text is ascribed to a Sangha, but we really know it's by Nagarjuna, you know? So ascribed means, you know, falsely imputed. This is tema. Tema means it's a reasonable ascription, you see? It's tema. Tema means reasonable if not accurate, okay? I used to try to convince my boss of the difference between a reasonable decision and a correct decision. You know what I mean? Like, based on what I knew, I made a correct decision. Now, it happened to be work out wrong later on, but based on what I knew, that's all I could come up with. I made the best decision possible, even though later it turned out to lose the company a lot of money. You know, because according to all I knew at that time, that was reasonable. So that's a tema is reasonable. So to me, ascribe means, you know, that there's no reason to ascribe it to a Sangha. It was really by Nagarjuna. But anyway, that's dok. Dok means to label, to put something, impose. I like the word impose. You're imposing pen upon those that dana. Okay, all you really see is colors and shapes. So colors and shapes precede the perception of the colors and shapes. And they help create the perception of the colors and shapes. And then they're interpreted by the mind as a pen. And then a moment later, a thing called a pen exists. And then a moment later, the perception of the pen exists. How's that? Okay. So you get data, perception of data, organization of data, you know, imposed object, and then an awareness of the imposed object. How's that? Yeah. Oh, by the way, so Leon said, well, you know, on a one-by-one basis, all the stuff you talk about sounds reasonable. But why is it that suddenly 85 people in this room would all collectively perceive this thing as a pen? That's just the result of common karma, what we call common karma, you know. And it's true that, generally speaking, the big division is by the five rik, drawa rik duk, or five or six classes of beings. The big divisions are between them. Like bugs, the animal realm doesn't perceive things at all like the human realm does. And that's all only two realms we accept in America. But hell realm people and pretas, hungry ghosts, would perceive the same objects in a much, much different way. But you can accept at least that an animal and a human perceive the same object in a much different way. If we all happen to see a pen, all the people in this room, it's because we all had a similar karmic cause to see the pen. And that's, in fact, if you think about it carefully, that's why there's six kinds of beings. It's not the other way around. The fact that there's six kinds of beings is not self-existent. The reason we're all called humans is that we're all having similar karmic ripenings in our minds, and that puts us all in the same boat. It's very interesting. It's not that there's a class of things called humans independent of that fact. It's the fact that we all see things in a similar way because we all collected similar karma is why we're called humans. You see? It's very delicate. Think about it like that. But Master Shantideva would say, look, that's similar to the argument that, oh, this has been going on so long, then shouldn't it be self-existent, you know? I've been perceiving this so long that it must have some reality. And then he says, look, you know, it's all a dream. It doesn't matter whether the dream... In a dream, you can dream something you can remember a day's passing in a dream, and you can remember hundreds of years passing in a dream, or a whole lifetime passing in a dream. But when you wake up, the argument that one is more true because it's been going on longer in your dream is not valid. And the fact that more people are seeing something as something doesn't make it more self-existently that way. I think he would argue the same way. He does that about time, you know. So I think he'd say it about the number of people seeing things. We know that it's possible for large masses of people to misperceive something like Hitler. You know, we know that it's possible for millions of people to follow this crazy guy because they're all having the same karma at the same time to think he's a great guy or something like that. It doesn't make it right that Or the abortion, you know, it doesn't make it right that many people think that way. You see what I mean? It doesn't make it more right. In fact, you know, Buddhists are such a tiny minority and happen to be completely right. And yeah, there are. I mean, yeah. Assuming no two people are the emanation of one being. Seriously. Okay. Which is possible. Yeah. It's possible there's 84 emanations in here of being projected by one Buddha, and I'm the only non-Buddha here. You know. Seriously. You know. Yeah. But if they're not, then there's 85 mind streams going on here. And they will never mix together. Because... Oh. Yeah. Generally perceiving the same thing. You know, generally you can all say you're seeing me. You're seeing my shapes and colors. You know, and apparently you all have the karma to see me as Michael Roach or something like that. Excuse me. Because of the ripening of karma is an individual thing. It's very interesting, you know. Yeah, you are the sum total of the ripening of your karmic seeds. You see, even David Sykes, for David Sykes, is the sum total of the ripening of David Sykes' karmic seeds, and it will always be that way. It's funny. You think you're a person, and you're right. Just because so many seeds are going off at the same time, they make you think it like that. And it'll always be like that. Yeah. You're talking about the pieces of the parts of the parts, and we're going to get to that later on. I've been carefully avoiding it because Master Shantideva gets into it later. We will talk. I promise we'll talk about it. This, if I keep promising you some tidbits, you might come back. You know. Yeah. We are saying, the Madhyamika says, the stuff is not there in the way you thought it was, but it is there. How is it there? It's there because you're projecting onto it what you see. Okay? It's not coming from its side the way it looks like it is. That's all. But it still functions. You can still get run over by a car, even though it's your projection. Okay? One more question, then we got to start, because you guys will be here all night. Yeah. Who? No, they would say the same thing. They would say the same thing. Every school, even down to the lowest school, the Vaibhashika, second chapter, Abhidharma Kosha, sets forth five conditions, and that's one of them. Every Buddhist school accepts that the mind is a... One of the conditions for the arisal of a state of mind is the presence of its object. So, you know. They say it comes from the same karmic seed, but I think they would say that one maybe comes a moment before or something like that. How's that? You know, the same karmic seed makes that pew occur a millisecond before my awareness of it. Okay? Like, it's not outside of the laws of karma that the same karmic seed causes that a millisecond before it causes my perception of it. Like that. Okay. How's that? All right. We better get... in the debate ground, they teach us when to change the subject. Okay. We're through the mind-only school. Now they're going on to different proofs for the existence of emptiness and for the importance of emptiness. But now we start out with an argument, mostly by two groups called the listeners and the self-made Buddhists. These are two Hinayana groups. These are two lower, I call them lower way. Hina means, Memba in Tibetan means lower. Yana means way. Does it mean that they're stupid? No, they're brilliant. Okay. Does it mean that we should reject them? No, we're not allowed to reject them. That's a bodhisattva vow. Does it mean that some of their explanations are wrong? Yes. Okay. Are all the people who are called Theravadins or Hinayana in the world not concerned about saving all sentient beings? I doubt it. Okay. Of course they're concerned about saving all sentient beings. So Hinayana is a theoretical group of people. Okay. Who theoretically aren't interested in saving all sentient beings. They would like to reach happiness themselves. and they're not so concerned about spreading it to other people. So this is a theoretical group of people that Master Shantideva is attacking. Probably there were people in his time who has said that it was important to reach your individual nirvana, but not to help all other living beings. Okay, if you read Abhidharma Kosha, which is supposed to be one of their books, it's full of helping all sentient beings. So, okay, so we're talking about a theoretical thing, and I'm not putting down all the Theravada or Hinayana schools in the world. Yeah. No, the mind-only school is a Mahayana school, and the other two schools, the Vaibhashika and the South Trantika, are Hinayana schools. Okay. So anyway, there are some Hinayanas, okay, theoretical Hinayanas, who come to the to Shantideva, Master Shantideva, and they say, look, you can start trying to prove emptiness to us, but why? What's the use of it? You don't need to see emptiness to get to Nirvana and Buddhahood. Okay, they say that. Not necessary. So then Master Shantideva says, well, what do you have to see to get to Nirvana and Buddhahood? And they say, yeah, it's one of my caves. It's not self-existent, because I see it as a cave, but you don't. Okay? Say, mitak, so, chudu. Mitak, so, chudu. Mitak means impermanent or changing. Okay, changing. Sok means etc. Chuduk means 16. Chuduk means 16. The number 16. Okay. These are known as the 16 aspects of the four so-called noble truths. Okay, the four noble truths. The way it really happens is like this. I've mentioned it before, but I'll go through it again. I'll start with staring at the pot on the stove, which we've been talking about, right? So you're standing there staring at the pot on the stove, and suddenly you get it that you're not watching a pot, you're watching a bunch of colors and shapes, and that there never was any pot out there, and that what's making it a pot is your own mind. And your own mind, forced by your past karma, is organizing those colors and shapes into a perfect little picture of a pot, which is only about that big and is somewhere back here. Okay, it's not out on the stove. All these years you've only been watching pictures of pots in your mind. Your eye never saw a pot. Your eye can only see colors and shapes. We got that out already. You go in the temple an hour later, you go into a deep state of meditation, and you see emptiness directly for like 20 minutes. You come down out of that meditation, and it's like a physical sensation of coming down from another realm, because that state of meditation is related to the form realm. Okay, and there's a physical sensation of coming down out of the meditation. Then you're back to seeing normal things again, and you begin to have a series of extraordinary experiences for the rest of the day, like even up to the evening. And you realize, you have deep spiritual realizations, which are not the perception of emptiness, okay? Throughout the whole day. The moment you see emptiness, the first instant of the 20 minutes, you are already an Arya, okay? Pakpa in Tibetan. Meaning, you are a person who has seen emptiness directly. So from the very first instant, from the first millisecond of seeing emptiness directly, you have changed status. You are now a different kind of being. You're what we call a realized being. Okay. The word Arya can be translated as noble. Okay, noble one. Or it literally means higher one. Okay, not noble. Noble to me means virtuous or self-sacrificing or like that. It has nothing to do with that in the direct perception of emptiness. You are a higher being now. Okay, you are a different kind of being. You are one in a billion. You know, you are one in maybe a billion or more. Okay, you are one of those people who has seen emptiness directly. After living countless lifetimes, within typically seven lifetimes, you will now be enlightened. So you are a totally different kind of being. That's what Arya means. It doesn't mean noble. Okay, all those ideas that you get, those great spiritual perceptions that you get, after that, after you come down out of emptiness, for the rest of the day, okay, some of them sitting still on your meditation seat, and other ones happening while you're walking around afterwards, all of those things are called the four Arya truths. The four truths that are seen by a person who has just seen emptiness directly. Okay? So I don't think they should be called noble. That's a mistranslation that came from some early Western translations, and hopefully we can stamp it out, but looks like we might get stuck with it. They are the four Arya truths. Okay? Typically they can be grouped into like 16 different great ideas that you get. And these are the 16 aspects of impermanence, etc. Okay? You can divide all of those experiences into four big groups. Oh, I finally understood suffering. I finally understood where it's coming from. I finally understood that you can shut it off. I finally understood that how you can shut it off. Those are the four Arya truths. And then inside of each of them are four different ideas happening. Okay. Now the lowest schools, for example, the Abhidharma schools, they got mixed up. Okay. They think that you perceive, for example, 15 of those 16 aspects during the direct perception of emptiness. They think there's nothing more to the path of seeing than seeing those 16 aspects or 15 aspects. Okay. They think that, and they think each one takes a moment or something like that. They believe the whole path of seeing is over in 15 or 16 seconds, and that during each one of those you see one aspect of the Four Noble Truths. So somebody from that school would say, you don't have to see emptiness directly. Okay, all you have to do is understand those Four Noble Truths, and you can get rid of your mental afflictions. Okay, they've confused the what we call Jetobyeshi with Tongning Unsen Dutopa. They've confused the period when you're seeing emptiness directly with what we call subsequent knowledge, which is what happens to you following the perception of a direct perception of emptiness after you come out, after you come down. Okay, they've confused those two. So they say to Master Shantideva, why do you have to see emptiness directly? If you understand these 15 or 16 aspects of the four Arya truths, everything's okay. You can get rid of your mental afflictions. And anyone, I'm not sure they would say this, but generally they're saying that anyone, whether they've seen emptiness directly or not, if they understand these impermanence and other spiritual, great spiritual ideas, then they can get rid of their mental afflictions. Okay? And they can get to be an arhat, which means reaching nirvana. They can reach nirvana. Okay? Let me get your homework out to make sure. But by the way, it is true that during the time that you are understanding the 16 aspects deeply, by the way, you never understand them directly until after you see emptiness directly. Okay? You never really understand suffering the way it really is until you've seen emptiness directly, until right after that. You really don't understand impermanence directly until after you come out of the direct perception of emptiness. Okay? But they would say, let me put it up on the board for you. It is true that you can, if you have those great ideas, you can repress your mental afflictions temporarily. Okay? And this whole book by Master Shantideva so far has been explaining to you how you can repress your mental afflictions. Okay? Which mental afflictions? There's two kinds of mental afflictions, and you have to know that to do this. Say Ngungyurwa and Baglanyawa. Ngungyurwa, Baglanyawa. Okay. These are the two kinds of mental afflictions. I mean, there's many ways to divide mental afflictions, like root and secondary, etc. But these are important in our discussion tonight. Ngungyurwa means manifest. I've translated it as manifest. Manifest means it's in your mind right now. Okay? It's up front in your mind right now. For example, when the boss is screaming at you and you're angry, that's called Ngungyurwa. Okay? That's a manifested in your mind. What would you want to say? It's a directly existing in your mind, or it's appearing in your mind actively, like you're angry. So that would be Ngungyurwa. That the mental affliction of anger would be present, okay, in your mind in a manifest form. Okay, Patlanyawa means you're not angry right now, but you have the bakchat. Okay, bakchat means a potential in your mind. It's an energy in your mind. Bakchak can be shortened to pak. And nyawa, those who know the kirim kirimba chukchik, know nyaw dam 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 dutinyang. Nyawa means nyaw. Nyaw dam 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 dutinyang. What's the first kirim? Sleeping, okay? So, bakla nyawa means it's sleeping as a potential. Okay? It's sleeping, it's dormant. How about dormant? Okay? Bhaktanyawa means dormant, and Lungyuru is the opposite, like active in your mind. Okay? The concept is this, you know. You can't say that you have eliminated anger from your mind just because you're not mad right now at this moment, okay? Because you have tons of anger, bhaktanyawa, okay? Dormant in your mind. The capacity for anger you have not gotten rid of yet. Okay? You can go test it, you know, go to work, screw up some major task that your boss gave you, and check and see if you have any baklanyawe anger. You know what I mean? So, and by the way, that's the concept of a monastery, you know? I mean, the first stage of treating your mental affliction disease, for if you can't control yourself, is to remove yourself from the things that might incite it. You know, it's to remove yourself from the things that might trigger it. So if you can't get rid of your anger any other way with a particular person, Buddhism says, avoid them. You know, it's the worst remedy. It's the lowest level remedy. But at least it keeps you from collecting a lot of bad karma. You know, there are times when the best antidote, if you just can't handle that mental affliction, whether it's jealousy, desire, or anger, or whatever, is just not to get in that person's way. You know, just avoid seeing that person, or don't expose yourself to that object that you desire. Okay, and that's called it's a very low level of method to get rid of to stop a mental affliction. But are you stopping the mental affliction? That's my question. You're stopping the lungyurwa, okay? You're stopping the direct manifestation of that mental affliction. But baklanyawa is still there. It's still dormant. And until you can get rid of the bakcha, you know, the affliction in its dormant form, you can't say you've reached nirvana. Okay? Nirvana is eliminating manifest mental afflictions and also the dormant ones. Because what's the point? I mean, you could just go lock yourself in a room somewhere and try not to think about your enemy. Okay? And you wouldn't get angry. Right? And that is basic concept of monastery. You know, just it has to be so many fathoms from the nearest town. You just won't see anything you desire or anything that makes you very angry. You know, that's the basic concept, is to just lock yourself out of the things that might. But eventually you have to face it. Eventually you have to get rid of the potential or the seed in your mind. And you have to be able to stand there in front of the person you most hate and not get angry at all. Okay? And that's the difference. Now, Master Shantideva admits to the Hinayana guys, I admit that if you see those 16 aspects, like if your mother dies, you know, and suddenly you're thrust into this temporary realization of impermanence, it's very hard to be angry at the funeral. You know, it's very angry to think about that girl's legs at the funeral of your mother, you know. So, I mean, during a temporary state of the understanding of impermanence, you know, it's very difficult to have a strong mental affliction. But does it last? No. Okay, it'll come back. What have you removed for the period that it's lasting? You know, during your grief, you know, for the 2-3 days during your grief, what have you removed? The manifestation. Okay? You're not going to have extreme anger or extreme desire come up active in your mind. But you haven't done anything to the seeds, he says. So he's complaining to the Hinayana people. Look, you can have a deep understanding of the 16 aspects, okay? But that ain't gonna affect the dormant mental afflictions, the seed for the mental afflictions, the potential for the mental afflictions. You can't say that that's enough. You must what? See emptiness directly. Okay? You must see emptiness directly. And by the way, you don't really see those 16 aspects until, you know, 5 minutes after you see emptiness directly. Okay? After you come out, you start seeing them directly. So Master Shantideva says, look, your argument is dumb. Don't tell me you don't have to see emptiness because you can see those impermanence and other things. Okay? I admit that they help for a while, but you can't get rid of the seeds of them in your mind unless you see emptiness directly. By the way, if you ever read Nagarjuna, Arya Nagarjuna, as he's called, his favorite name, we translated a commentary on one of his works by Jetsun Kapa's teacher named the Sakya Rendawa. And it's an interesting book. It's called Letter to a Friend, Friendly Letter, Sorleka in Sanskrit. And the first half of it is all these tricks about how not to get desire. It's written for monks and kings, you know, not how not to get angry. It's all these great advices like, think of the lady as your sister and you won't get desire, you know. Think of your enemy as your friend and you won't feel angry. And then about halfway through, he says, by the way, none of this stuff works. And then somebody says, well, what works, you know? And he says, seeing emptiness, of course, directly. And then they say, well, how do you do that? And then the rest of the book is really cool. It's about, you know, it's about seeing emptiness directly. It gives you the ammunition to get rid of the seeds, okay? And we'll talk about how before this night is over, all right? But you have to understand this distinction. What they claim, that if you understood impermanence, you know, during that, what we call goosebump renunciation, because it doesn't last much longer, after your mother dies, you're a very good Buddhist for like a week or a month or 6 months, you know, because you really feel suffering. And then it starts to wear off, okay? So he says, that's not enough. That will not get rid of the bokchaks of mental afflictions. It won't get rid of mental afflictions which are deep inside of you. You have to be able to stand in front of the thing that most triggers your mental afflictions and just have totally joy standing in front of them. And then you can say you've got rid of your mental afflictions. Okay? And it should last forever. It's not like just because your mother died or someone's very ill or you just heard you have AIDS or something that you're compassionate towards everybody for like a week. Okay? It doesn't happen like that. Okay? Yeah. A little bit. But again, it's just temporary. That's the problem. It's just temporary. You don't want a temporary solution to your mental afflictions. Why? They will continue to create bad karma for you, and your world will continue to be terrible, okay, as long as they do. Let me go on for a little bit, okay? So that's Master Shantideva's answer to those guys. By the way, he then gets into, look, anyway, Sutra says, the Buddha said, you have to see emptiness directly, even to get to nirvana, much less Buddhahood. Okay, to get to nirvana, you must see emptiness directly. And the Hinaya people say, where does it say that? Where did he say that? Show us. So Master Shantideva pulls out Yumkido. Okay. What's the yum in yabyum? Yabyum is like male, female, right? And the yum means the woman part, the mother part. Okay, it's called mother. If you see 7 years in Tibet, it's the honorific, by the way. So His Holiness is mother. Every Dalai Lama's mother is called the yum of the country. You know, she's the big yum. Okay, when you talk about your Lama's mother, you always say yum. You don't say ama or ma. Okay, you say yum. All right. Yumkido Do means sutra. The mother sutras, or the mother sutra, are the sutras on the perfection of wisdom. Okay? Why? Huh? Yeah, they give birth to Buddhas. Okay? The perfection of wisdom is like a big mommy that whose child or baby, you know, it's always going around pregnant. And always producing enlightened beings, okay? That's why we call it the mommy, the mother, the yum, okay? Wisdom is called the yum, okay? Even at the beginning of the Heart Sutra, Bhagavati, you know, the female Buddha. Why? Always giving kids, What kids? Enlightened beings. Arya is another enlightened being, okay? All right, so it's called the mother. All right. The trick here is, and I ask you a question, is that a Mahayana sutra or a Hinayana sutra? It's Mahayana. It's a bigger way, okay? So is it a good argument to give to these guys? The Buddha said so in the Yom Kippur. Huh? It's not. What do they think about the Mahayana? They reject it completely, okay? They say all those Mahayana books are false. You know, they were not spoken by the Buddha. We don't agree that they were spoken by the Buddha. And